Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. A couple of important things before we get into the Leargang post-race show. First up, thanks to PNW Components for their support this month. Seems like you guys have been making the most of their listener discount as I've seen quite a few of you posting pictures of your new Loam Lever dropper remotes. They're an awesome bit of kit, so I hope you enjoy using them. If you've not checked them out yet, then head to pnwcomponents.com. They've got a wicked range of top quality droppers, remotes, bars and stems at great prices. And as a Downtime listener, you get 10% off until the end of June. All you need to do is use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout. Secondly, thanks for your support. The podcast is growing fast and it's all down to you spreading the word. Please keep telling your riding friends about the podcast and let them know what they're missing out on if they aren't listening. If you want to support us and show you're part of a growing group of riders who are listening, learning and getting faster as a result, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop and check out our awesome merchandise. Thanks to everyone who's bought something and it all helps to keep the podcast going. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, join our newsletter and I'll keep you up to date with everything podcast related, and give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Oh, and I also want to say thanks to the anonymous listener whose financial contribution, along with an offer of somewhere to sleep from the guys at Chamonix MTB, means that I'm going to be heading to the Léger World Cup. This gives me the chance to record some more in-person episodes with exciting guests and to record the post-race show in person, which definitely makes things better for everyone. So I'm super excited. Thanks to everyone that's been involved in that. Right, let's get into the Leargang post-race chat. Once again, I'm joined by Elliot Jackson and Nico Mullally to go behind the scenes and find out what went on and what it took to win at this unique track. Okay, welcome back to another post-race show. This time it's the wrap-up from Leargang, which was another super exciting race. Went down to the line in both the categories. So we've got our two usual suspects, Nico Mullally and Elliot Jackson. So we'll say hello to these guys first. Elliot, how's things with you?
Oh yeah, good. I just left Leargang. I'm in Innsbruck now. Gonna try to ride a bike and see how that goes. I feel like I've been like a, what do they call it, like sideline, like couch coach or whatever. But I'm just like, yeah, like if I was out there, like psh, I would have been doing this and doing that. It's like, okay, well, you're racing now, so go ahead.
Excellent. So you got to show them how it's done now, then.
Yeah.
Excellent. And you had a good weekend in Leargang? You enjoyed yourself?
It was really, really, really good. I think it was the most interesting one to date for me.
Excellent. Cool. We'll talk about that in a bit more detail. Nico, how's things with you?
Good. Yeah, just got back home after trip to Europe. So, yeah, everything's good. Enjoyed hanging out in Leargang with Elliot. We had some good times together in the week between the races. So, yeah, good times.
Excellent, good stuff. Well, let's start off with talking a little bit about the course, and they've made a few changes from the previous year's course. Elliot, obviously you spent the time on earlier in the week kind of walking down the course and looking at riders coming through in the practice sessions. What did you think to the changes that they've made?
Yeah, I think it was I think it's always interesting because no matter what you do to that track, it's always just going to kind of be, unless you're going to build a new track or whatever, it's just going to be inherently just tight and difficult. I think it made it probably this year, the changes that they made it even more like amplified all of that stuff that was there before. So before it was difficult. Like you couldn't make a mistake and there wasn't much time to be made up. And this year it took that to like another level where like it's these awkward little turns and whatever. And so if you made a mistake, there's nowhere to make it up there, you know, like at Leargang, maybe you have the ability to make up like, you know, 0.5%, whereas like Val d'Isol, you have the ability to make up like 5%, but you can still lose just as much. So it's really punishing. Yeah, I think Nico would probably talk about the awkwardness of it, but.
Yeah, go on, Nico. What were your thoughts on the course?
Well, after track walk, somebody asked me if I liked the course and I said, yeah. And they said, well, why do you like it? I was like, because nobody else does. A lot of riders were complaining that the way that they put the poles in made it super awkward. And I could see what they're trying to do is just slow it down and make it a bit tighter instead of just being a freeway. And that was good. They did that, but it just didn't offer much line choice. Like everybody was even more than ever on the same line and on that course this year. We were joking, like, I wanted to make like a video meme of somebody doing like the Olympic javelin throw and say like how the course poles were placed in New York.
what was it like to ride then? Did it kind of ruin the flow of the track or not?
Well, it didn't have a whole lot of flow, but it just made it a bit tighter, and it was mainly in that upper section with the stumps. You had to like go over a lot of the stumps, and that's just like such a weird thing. Like if you look at Leogang as a track, very little of it looks like a mountain bike trail. It looks more like a four-wheel drive trail. Like it's super wide and like hard packed and like loose gravel all over it. And then you go to that section with the stumps, and it's like I never would like ride my bike like over a stump that's 2 feet tall. It's just such a weird thing. But it was a good challenge, and it definitely, like, that stump section was one of the more technical parts for sure, and it worked well. It was just, yeah, a lot slower than it was in years past, which I don't think the riders like, because it didn't have that flow to it. But that was definitely, I could see what they're trying to do. They slow it down, make it a bit safer, but also make it a little bit reward someone who can hit that turn faster. That's not just easy and flows.
Yeah. And the course, I mean, it was dry all weekend, right? A lot of riders over it. Did it change quite a lot throughout the weekend?
I think so. It felt like there was more and more loose crap all over the trail as it got to like Sunday. Like even first round of practice Sunday morning, there was like big rocks like out in the way and stuff. So it just like started to break apart instead of like cut in. Like I guess on the first day we got a little bit of rain on Thursday before Friday's practice, so it cut in more than like broke apart. And then as the weekend went on, it just like there was the main line and then there was just junk all over the track everywhere else, so you couldn't really get off of it. And some of that started to come into the track by race day when it was just dry and loose like that.
Yeah. And Elliot, what do you think were the kind of keys to this track then, having spent the time chatting to the riders and walking the track? Were there certain sectors that or certain sections that were like fundamental to getting a good result?
Well, I think the reason it was so interesting to me because I've never seen riders struggle so much. Like I've never, like, and for no reason, I mean, the track was difficult, but like for no reason, like it wasn't like it rained or it wasn't like there was some thing that you couldn't ride or whatever. Like the first day, like you kind of really had to respect the track and say, and not just say like, oh, this is easy or whatever. Cause like, so many times, like on the first run, you'd see people like blowing through the tape because they were just like, it wasn't intuitive. Normally when you ride down a downhill track, it's, you could kind of get up to speed, do what you need to do. But I was saying, if you looked at Leogang, it was kind of like everywhere that you would normally want to break, the breaking points were like super unintuitive because you would have to like move them back and say like, well, what I'm really thinking about here is like four turns later. And I need to break a bit earlier than I normally would because this is going to set me up for that like fourth turn, because that fourth turn maybe leads on to like the motorway or some part that's like really important. And so I think, you know, like talking to Loic, he was, and a lot of people, like time training and practice in general, it was, they're really gathering information rather than like trying to get up to speed. It was more like how much can I push, like how do I fit like my personality into this kind of thing, where it's like, oh, I like, you know, where can I make up time and where can I not make up time? Because if I try to push somewhere that I'm not comfortable, I'm going to make a mistake. If I make a mistake, like I lose the race. So, yeah, it was just an interest, like really interesting weekend. I thought, like, trying to see how riders dealt with that, because I think pretty much everyone struggled with it. And I think Loic, it was crazy because he like was really honest and vulnerable about how much he was struggling with it on practice day. And then he ended up winning the race. So I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, that was an insane performance. We'll talk a bit more about that. Do you think the lack of kind of intuitive nature of the track is because it's so far away from being a natural trail? It's not like someone's just carved a trail down the mountain. It's very kind of man-made and kind of contorted away from its natural roots.
Well, I think it's just interesting that it's that, like Nico said, is like you can almost think about it like a MotoGP or like F1, where if you get out of the main line and you're into all this gunk and whatever. And so I don't think that's like super normal for a track. Like a lot of the times you might get offline, but it's okay. And like if you got offline here, it was just like really punishing. Like you couldn't, if you got offline, you couldn't get it back, where you might blow out this turn, which means, you know, you blow out the next turn, or you might slide out or something, you know. Like I don't know if Loris, you know, came out of the main line when he fell, but it was kind of that style of thing where like you make maybe just one little mistake or push a little bit too hard or lose focus or whatever, and you just crash or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that a big reason of why it kind of is unintuitive like that is because you have the bike park trail, that's the racetrack, and the way that they put the poles in, it like bus stops up off of the racetrack so many times. So you're like riding beside it or like turning before one of the berms and going up into the grass next to it and then back onto the trail, or riding like over the back of one of the berms to make an off camber, which I appreciate them doing that because it kind of just changes the course. So it's not just the same highway that everyone's doing, but it kind of like, especially if you've raced it a few years where it just followed the trail last time, you're coming through the same section, but it's like taped totally different. So yeah, it's like, yeah, you've experienced riding this course and it working this way. And then now this year it's like, oh, well, it's taped totally different, so I need to like break and like turn before the turn. Or there was like a couple of sections where you'd come out like up top, you came out of one of the tunnels and it was like a blind rise. It's like the scariest thing ever to do. You come out flying from this tunnel and then it's a blind rise to an off camber, like loose gravel turn. But instead, yeah, last year it was like straight and you went way further and then turned. And this year the turn was like right after it. So it was like hard to judge how much to like break before you went off of that. And if you went too far, you were like jumping into the, like, I guess, little tiny hole that you, like braking bump hole that you were like using to turn off of. So just stuff like that was like just taped weird is why it maybe felt unintuitive like that.
Yeah.
I
feel like almost they did a really good job of picking those points of like, okay, right here, you're normally like pin going around a berm. Like, let's break that up. Like, let's make it an off camber or whatever. Like every point that like, yeah, like Nico was saying, like had some flow or like you would normally set up for or whatever. It's like they broke that up this year.
Yeah. So with a course like that, then Nico, how many runs would you say it takes you to start feeling kind of like you can know where you're heading and you're able to start pushing on the pace?
Well, it wasn't that many runs really, because there wasn't that many lines. Like once you kind of remembered where the course went, there wasn't a lot that you could do to put your tires on a different part of the course than the rest of the field. So it was more learning about like, where are my breaking points? How far can I push over some of the entrances to these sections? And that was something that I struggled with, like coming over a rise and committing to something, not really quite being comfortable with where the breaking point was after it. I think that's what, like, if you watch Loic's run, he did so well, coming over the edges of this stuff with a lot of speed and then being on point, even though you couldn't really see where you were going, to then hit your breaking point and then commit to the turn. So that was the difficult thing, was like learning how hard to push it more than like really learning the course.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super hard to appreciate that, I guess, watching it on the TV, because you can't really tell what you guys can and can't see when you come in intersections. So yeah, it's hard for us to appreciate, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk a bit about bikes. So Nico, obviously you've just come straight from Fort William. The bike took a fair hammer in there. Like the weather was horrific. bikes are definitely getting some use. What happens during the week? Do all the bikes get stripped right down? Or?
Yeah. So the mechanics, I mean, they're working there all week. They're going to drive from Fort William to Leogang, which is pretty much a full 2-day deal. A lot of them take the ferry from Newcastle to somewhere in Holland and then drive through Germany. So it's a big mission to get from Fort William to Leogang in 2 days. And then they got to build the pit. And then they have normally 2 days to work on the bikes between. And I mean, World Cup race bikes are well maintained. Like before the race run in Fort William, those things are completely dialed. And then they're going to do one run and then get completely torn down again. So they get pretty much like 5 minutes of use and then a complete rebuild after that, which is, I mean, the bikes run awesome. Like it's one of the biggest perks of being a pro rider. Like my bike at home, I should maintain it, I guess, myself. I wouldn't say I'd maintain it because I do the bare minimum, but I ride all the time at Windrock and the mud and some rough, gnarly courses. And I you know, do what I need to make sure it's in running order. But compared to what the mechanics do, it's like every time I jump on the bike, it's pretty much brand new. It's like you're riding a new bike every time you get on it, which is so cool. Kind of spoils you for when you go back home. But yeah, they'll do a complete teardown on the frame. Like they'll replace or at least clean all the linkage bearings and make sure that everything there is as, I mean, if it's only got 5 minutes on, it's probably not that worn out, but just to make sure it's clean, there's no dust or dirt in there or grime from the mud. They'll replace any parts that are like wearable things like brake pads, chains, if they need to be replaced. They'll bleed the brakes normally and tire change. Pretty much just get the bike back to being totally ready to go. A lot of times, like if you race the tires in Fort William for your race run, they're normally pretty new. If you only use them quali and race or something, then they can be your practice tires for the next weekend. So little things like that. But they definitely will tear down the whole bike, address every single component, every part of it, and then rebuild it. So that's pretty much all they have to do. So they
busy week.
Yeah.
I thought it was so cool, actually. Like went over to Nico's pit and was talking to John Hall, Aaron's mechanic, and he had a heat gun and he was like heating up the rotors. And I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, well, I'm just trying to get all the contaminants off so that way we don't have to put on new stuff. Because I think a lot of people would be like, oh, you guys just only want to run brand new stuff. But when you think about it, it's like if I could run, you know, like I think a lot of the times you change brake pads and stuff like that because they get contaminated and start to lose some power. Not so much because that they get worn down. Like Nico was saying, they only get used a couple times. So, you know, John was saying like, well, if we can get the brake feel back to where it was and not have to put on new pads and a new rotor, that's even better because no matter what, you're going to have to, you know, ride around the pits and try to break it in, but you can never really get it broken in. So it usually takes a turn or two to get the brakes, you know, broken in. And then inevitably, like they never break in the same way. They'll always be a little bit off or whatever. And at a World Cup, you don't really have that much opportunity to, you don't have that many runs. So to waste a run, like trying to, you know, break in brakes or get your bike just to where it's performing normally is kind of like a waste of time. So I thought that was cool. Like I thought that was a really cool trick to, you know, save time.
Yeah. So the heat gun just pulls the kind of oils or contaminants like out of the rotor, does it? Is that how it works?
Yeah. And to be honest, like we are running some prototype rotors that TRP is working with us on to go up to the bigger 223 ones. So we don't have really that many, which is probably another part of the reason why John was trying to conserve the parts that we do have. I think that's another thing with a lot of like race teams. Like a lot of times you're running prototype stuff that you might not have just an ample supply of. So you have to kind of make some parts last a little bit. And that's a little bit what he was doing. Like with friction surfaces, it's so important to make sure that they don't ever get contaminated. Once they like go past a certain point, you can never really clean them again. So just like he used that heat gun and everything to try to just make sure everything's super clean and there's no issues going forward. But like burning brake pads in, it is a important thing to do. Like maybe people, average riders, don't realize, but like at a World Cup, you don't want to just throw a new set of brakes and brake pads and rotors on and just rip down the track, because you're not gonna be able to stop in the first turn, and it's like wasting a run. And if you don't like burn them in correctly, like if you just like ride down the whole course, it doesn't, because what I guess you're trying to do is like match or transfer some of the material from the pad to the rotor. And if you like, the way that I normally do it is like roughly like 15 miles an hour to 5 miles an hour stops, like as many as you can in a row. So like what I'll do, I'll take the bike up the gondola like the day before and just ride down the fire road and like burn the brakes in. That way they're like all set to go. But if you like just throw new ones on and go practice, then you're wasting a run. Try to burn them. And you're not going to burn them in right either. Like you're going to like slam on your brakes. And anyway, it's not like the ideal way to burn it bed in a brake pad. So I saw the Canyon guys had like a drill that they would run. Like they had somehow hooked up to where they'd put the drill into like what the rotor was mounted to, and they had a brake mounted to it as well, like in a vise, and they could spin the rotor and then drag the brake with a drill spinning the rotor, so they could burn the pads and rotors in before having it go up. That was pretty sick.
Super cool.
Yeah, and I guess these little things make a difference. You guys want to know that the brake's going to do the same thing every time you use it, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it makes such a difference to be like the bike just completely consistent.
Cool. And so, Nico, was bike setup like, was it a pretty obvious choice as to how you set the bike up for this round, or was there a bit of work to be done to get the optimum?
Yeah, there was a bit for sure. But I kind of had experience with what I was looking for after walking the course and racing it the past couple of years. Liaogang is a bit steeper than Fort William, and there's some really big compressions on it. I think maybe a little bit more than Fort Will. So I ended up running my fork a little bit stiffer to try to get the front end to hold up on some of that stuff. And I kind of just went with that from the first run of practice, 2 PSI higher in the fork. And it seemed like it worked really well. It's definitely a balance between having the bike hold up and like be efficient through the motorway, hold up through some of the big compressions, but also get grip on like this hard packed with loose gravel over it sort of surface. So sometimes like the stiff setup that you need to hold up in those big compressions is the opposite of what you need to get grip in those flat turns with gravel on them. So it's kind of like a balance between that a little bit. And another thing that I've noticed in the past few years, especially at Liaogang, because it's normally a lot warmer at that race, your suspension pressure and your tire pressure kind of changes as it sits in the sun. So I try to like keep things consistent, keep the bike out of the sun as much as possible. And then I, instead of having my mechanic check the pressure every one, I guess there's two ways to do it. I know Marshy, Greg Menard's mechanic, he checks the fork every single run and resets it to what they want. And I say like, set it to what I was running 88 PSI, set it 88 PSI at 10 o'clock in the morning and just don't check it again after that. Cause it's not really in a day, like your fork is not going to lose pressure. Like if you leave your bike for a week, you might probably want to check it to make sure it's good. But when it goes and sits in the sun, like I've had it before where I start at 86 and then I say, it's a bit stiff, let's go to 88. It's a bit too soft, let's go to 88. And then you check it and it's been like out in the sun, or you've been riding and the bike's been like on the gondola in the sun or something. And you're like, oh, it's at 89 already. Do you want to go like to two more than that? Or do you want to go let one out? And I'm like, well, it's not stiff enough. So I guess let's go to two more than that, what it went to. And then the next morning, what do you do? Cause then the fork's cold. And then do you set it at like 91 or do you set it?
Yeah, right.
It's kind of gets to be confusing. So what worked for me to keep it consistent was just like, all right, this is what I know that like is going to work for me. I need my suspension to be roughly like 2 PSI more than normal. So let's go for that and just don't check it all day. Like set it in the morning, 88, we're good to go.
Fair play. And when you're putting that couple of extra PSI in the fork, are you making any other adjustments to the rebound or the compression damping to kind of account for that extra pressure?
I did. I went, I think a click slower on my both high and low speed rebound. And it was a combination of like it being hot and adding pressure. Like a lot of times only 2 PSI over the course of 88, for the difference between 86 and 88, you don't always need to do a full click of rebound for that little bit of change. But when it's hot as well, the oil in your fork is thinner, so the rebound is going to feel faster compared to like Fort William. It's cold and raining, the oil's thicker, so it's gonna feel slower. So a combination of the heat and added pressure, I did go slower with my rebound.
Cool, interesting stuff. Elliot, what were people up to with tire choice? Did it get quite kind of dusty and loose? Were people kind of playing around with different types of tire or cut tires or anything?
Yeah, I didn't really. The only person I talked to about tires was Loic, and he, I think what Nico was saying about the bike setup is just totally 100% like dead on. You're like kind of fighting these two opposite ends of the spectrum where it's like, ideally I would be running this super soft, like whatever setup. But then especially at the bottom of the track, like the only thing that you need to happen is for you not to like bottom out. Cause those G-outs at Leogang are probably the most gnarly ones, I would say, maybe like from all the tracks that I've ridden at least. And, but yeah, so like I think with the tires, I think a lot of people stay the same. But I know like Loic, he was saying he was really like trying to get his bike set up in time qualifying. And I thought that was interesting because a lot of the time you see riders really like going for it, and like Loic as well, like really using time training. It's like, okay, I've got my lines, I've got whatever, like I'm going to go and try to put in a fast run. And for Loic, he did a run. And then he changed tires and then he was slower and he was like, man, like, I don't know like what's going on. Like I tried to change tires, but I guess like that, and that run like felt a little bit better, but I was slower. So like, it was really, I think a lot of people were kind of fighting it, you know, like it really was like problem solving the whole weekend. I think it wasn't like an easy race for most people.
Yeah, Nico, did you try? Well, you obviously with the suspension setup, you've kind of tried to eliminate some of that doubt and some of that questioning by setting something and leaving it alone. Did you take that same approach for a lot of stuff throughout the weekend, like tire choice and that side of things? Do you like to try and keep as many decisions kind of simple as possible, or are you happy to try things and build up these big equations and try and work out what the right answer is?
I think for me, I kind of know where I'm going to end up, like the window anyway that I'm going to end up working in by the end. So I'm normally the past couple of years been just setting it and kind of set and forget kind of guy. But also like Loic has access to the data acquisition system that he runs with his mechanic, Jack. And I saw him, he was using it even Sunday morning in practice. So he has like that resource that kind of allows him to probably tune a little bit deeper. But for me, like I kind of know where it's going to work. And if there's a problem, like I'll for sure address it. But I pretty much know from experience now what I'm going to end up using for the race. And based on like racing this course 8 times already or whatever, and in this condition, similar condition, other races I've done, I can kind of be pretty sure where I'm going to be. So I normally just set it and run it. But like tires, we had a new prototype tire from Kenda that's a little bit faster rolling, and it worked pretty awesome this weekend. It was good on this course. So that was something that I didn't have a lot of time riding, or I haven't raced it before. But I went with it and it felt good. So stuck with it.
Sweet. And it was a super hot weekend. Is there any kind of, do you have to do anything to manage that heat, to kind of look after yourself as an athlete, like hydration and that side of things?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to forget to drink enough water or hydrate, and then eating as well is sometimes tough during the day because you don't want to eat a big meal, especially like the practice day. You got 5 hours to practice from 11:45 to 5, but you don't want to eat a big meal in between then. So you try to have snacks or granola bar or energy bar or whatever it is. But if you like sit down and eat a full lunch, then you got to take like some time to digest it, I guess. And it's similar too between like practice and the race. A lot of times, or practice and qualifying, there's only like 2 hours. So even then, like add being a little bit nervous on top of it, and you don't want to eat a big meal. So yeah, you just got to try, for me anyway, I try to like on the practice day, eat small snacks between each run, even if you're not like really hungry. It'll add up by the time you get around to your time practice, you're like, oh man, I'm starving, but I need to go to a timed run. So you don't want to eat too much. And then between like the practice and the race, or between practice and quality, try to like eat as soon as I get down from practice, so I have like the most time to digest it, even if I'm like not really that hungry at that time. So something that I've kind of learned. And then just, yeah, staying on top of hydration the same way. Like even if you don't feel really thirsty, like drink more than you think you need to. And by the time like you wait in line, go on the gondola, get to the top, like you'll be glad that you probably drank a little bit more fluid.
Yeah. And is it just straight up water, or do you put any kind of like hydration tablets or anything like that in with it?
We've got some stuff from Rhino Power that's pretty good. And it just like adds a little bit of like carbohydrate and salt to the drink, which is, I think it's good. It helps you like a little bit. Like if you drink too much water, it kind of like through your sweat, like kind of flushes out a lot of minerals and that are in your body. So yeah, I guess for me, like I usually have a bottle of water and a bottle of like sports drink that I alternate, drink a little of both while I'm practicing.
Cool. All right. Let's talk about the racing then. And we'll start with the women's racing. Elliot, what were your thoughts on the women's race this weekend? Any kind of standout performances or anything you want to kind of talk about?
Yeah, I think, one thing too, I wanted to say about the, when Nico was talking about the data stuff, I did get to talk to Kevin Jolly, Finn's mechanic. And I thought it was really cool actually, because he was talking about how he'll have like a couple of different setups. And then he'll have Finn go and try like different setups, and Finn will give feedback, and then Kevin will look at the data, and then he can kind of build a setup that incorporates both of those things. Because I think a lot of people with the data stuff, like it's so easy to take it the wrong way. Like it's not like a magic pill. Like you can't look at the data without a question and expect it to tell you an answer.
Yeah.
So I think I think the specialized team has like the best understanding of like what that's for. But it was also interesting because CommonSol uses just that little shock whiz thing or whatever it is. I know they're on SRAM. I don't know if it's SRAM specific or what, but, and it's just like, how many times did you bottom out, and like, what's the average sag and stuff like that? Which is interesting because it's like, I mean, also like, do you need a lot more than that? Like, you're kind of just like, oh, like we're bottoming out a lot more, or like we're sitting a little bit lower in the travel than we ever do. So maybe we can go a little bit stiffer. Like, we have the ability to go a little bit stiffer. So yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. And that's a super simple bit of kit that anyone can get their hands on as well.
Yeah. 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 I thought that was like, because it is like, you have a question of like, can I make my bike stiffer? And it's like, well, I'm actually not, you know, or maybe it's like, yeah, can I make my bike stiffer? And it's like, well, yeah, I can, because I'm hitting bottom out a ton. And then my, like, you know, my average where I'm sitting at in the stroke is like on average really low. So like, I do have room where otherwise maybe you'd be like, oh, well, I'm not bottoming out that much. So maybe that's not what it is. Like maybe I don't need to go stiffer. Maybe it's something else. And it could just like answer a question like that, like really easily.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives you a bit more data around more than just what you're feeling, I guess. It gives you something to kind of back up what you're feeling out on the track. It's cool.
Yeah, totally. But I think in terms of the women, I just been like the most impressed ever with Tracy. Like every single week, like it's her like mindset, like mentally is just so good. Like really just like the perfect attitude. I felt like, of like what every time I like ask her a question about like time training, she's just like right on it. Like just, I don't know, just so mentally like perfect. It feels like, and I think it's like comes a lot with the experience. And, you know, I think sometimes it's hard to, you know, keep a good mindset, especially like, you know, she's been racing a long time. And it is a lot, it's easy to be like, okay, like how do I keep motivation, or how do I, you know, still go really fast or whatever. And she just feels like she's really calm and just like approaching everything as it comes, not getting too wound up about anything. And it's also, I think, difficult when you qualify well, to stay mentally strong. And then especially if you qualify well and then don't win, then it's really hard because you're like, oh, well now I like, can I actually do it and whatever. And she seems like she's been handling that really well. And I think it kind of shows because she's closer than ever to Rachel, you know, like, and even Rachel talking, I talked to her after the race and she was like, yeah, like Tracy's been on it. Like I'm sad to lose, but or sad to crash, but like, I almost like want her to win, you know, cause she's been like training so hard and she actually like hadn't won a race since like 2015. So, yeah, it's just like really good to see her doing that. And I think too, the thing that was insane was Nina Hoffman's run was like one of the most exciting runs I've ever seen. Like she was just going for it, like all the jumps, like overshooting all the jumps, and like it was super cool, like really exciting. And it was good to see like she wasn't that far off Tracy, so it's like another girl who's in the mix.
Yeah, definitely. It was cool. And Kate Weatherly, obviously first podium for her. She's like the most stoked person I've ever seen. She looked kind of yeah. pretty shocked to be up there, but obviously happy with it. So that was cool to see. And a good run from Maureen Cabarrux until the bottom of the steps. Like she'd lost a big chunk of time and still ended up fourth, I think. Yeah. So yeah, clearly showing that there's potential there, but just not quite putting it together yet.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I feel like there's like a crew of women who are coming up and like taking it seriously, like really really like pushing the pace. And like there's still a gap between you know, Rachel and Tani and like kind of Tracy's up there now. There's still a gap, but you can see that all of that big group of girls, maybe like 6-7 girls behind them, are kind of pushing the pace up to where those other top three are.
Yeah, yeah, and good to see that there's still people challenging Rachel without Tani and Miriam there. So yeah, it's cool that everyone's pushing on and making it an interesting race. And then yeah. Tracy takes the overall from there, so she's got to be pretty happy with that, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, she's got like a little bit of a lead. I mean, like it's crazy, like what can happen. And I think downhill's gnarly like that because there's the points gap is so crazy, you know. From if you got like second in qualifying, second in race, you're over like 60 points back, just from getting second two times in a weekend. And that's a pretty big deal. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Tracy seemed pretty confident in her post-race interview that was something she might be able to continue and keep that lead. So yeah, I think 150 points ahead at this point in the season. So mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty solid. Cool. Let's move on to the men's. Nico, tell us a bit about your run. How did that go?
Man, I had a pretty good run. It was just super close racing out there. I've never feel like I've ridden so well to get 33rd place before. it was just tight. And Leo Gang's not really been one that I've ever done. Really, like, it's not been my favorite course just because there's not that much to separate you from the rest of the field. Yeah, it was, man, going up to the start again, knowing what I knew then, I wouldn't have done anything different. So just need to, looking back on it now, I think I just need to, like, come into this, some of those sections a little bit more committed, rather than, like, some of those rises, like we were saying, blind rises. Like, maybe I think I was just a lot too conservative compared to the best guys. They're just coming over that stuff confident, a lot faster, and then hitting their mark when they come over. And some of that stuff, like, once you check your speed, it's hard to get it back after that. So those guys are just running a higher pace over some of that stuff. And man, it's terrifying. Like, it's scary to commit when you're late in the run, going over some of those edges. Like, for me, I really struggled with that staircase section at the bottom. It was just, like, very precise breaking points, and the entrance was tough this year. And then you get to the bottom to, like, a dry, dusty turn that has like a closing apex and has less support as you go. So it's just, but I mean, hey, it's the same for everybody. I just had a hard time with that. And I think that's maybe where I left a little bit of time out there, was just, yeah, coming in over some of those blind rises and the entrance to some of those gnarly sections. I was maybe checking up just a bit too much compared to some of the rest.
Yeah. I thought it was, I was laughing when I was walking the track because I've been on this kick, you know, where I'm like, oh, downhill's, like, not, you know, there's so much more to it than just, like, a bunch of risk or whatever. And I, like, got to that section when I was doing the little Red Bull piece, and I was like, you know, I always talk about, like, you know, downhill's not, like, all about taking risk, but, like, this section is about taking risk. Like, you see the, like, the guys who are in maybe the top five, and they literally just, like, bounce down that section and then just lean over in the turn. And it's, like, one of the most impressive little bits of track to watch ever, because they are so committed. And, like, I think it's like such a hard mindset to have. And, like, like Nico was saying, it's like, you can't really see what's going on. And, like, you know, like, I have to, like, the berm is terrible and stuff. So it is, it's just like, you, everything is telling you, like, oh, that, you know, that berm is not very good. Like, this is probably the max speed. And I feel like those guys are like, okay, that's the max speed. I'm just going to go, like, twice as fast, maybe.
Insane. Yeah. Impressive. Super impressive riding. And you mentioned Loic earlier. I mean, this is, I guess, kind of the mark of a champion when you can turn things around like that. So qualify, well, all weekend, he, like you said, he was openly accepting that he was kind of struggling to find the pace, thought he had a good run in qualies and didn't place that well. Then he did a track walk, I think, with Petey, Luca and Loris after that to try and work out what was going on. He had a call with his mental coach. He took his telly bike up in the morning to do a run and try and sort stuff out. And apparently was 2 seconds slower than his qualifying time. And then somehow found 7 seconds in his race run. Like, how does that even happen? Can anyone explain how he's processing this? Like, what's your insight there, Elliot?
I have no idea. Like, I asked him that question, like, multiple times throughout the weekend. And I think it's just like, I don't know. Like, he's a really great racer. Like, I think there's something to be said about, you can be, like, a good rider and be skilled and even in qualifying and whatever, but there is, like, being able to turn it up and being able to, like, find that extra little bit of focus and whatever it is for the race. I think that's, like, he has that. And I think, like, Greg has that as well, like, where they can really just, like, race, like, so well. But I think it's funny, like you say, like Nico was saying, he was 33rd, but he's probably only, like, a second or, like, 2 seconds off of, like, a podium or something, you know. It's like so tight.
Yeah, super tight racing. So that, I mean, some really good performances. You mentioned Greg there, his first time qualifying at the front for pretty much 2 years, I think, and it looked like he was, you know, he might have done it. Like, it was super close, and he gave Loic a run all the way down to the line. Did you get a chance to speak to him after that, Elliot?
Yeah, one of the things too that I thought was so interesting was that he was like, yeah, I knew that I was behind. And I was like, how did you know? Like, how did you know you were behind, like, in the run? And he was like, oh, well, I clipped my pedal or something like that. And I actually thought it was loose, like, before the motorway or something. And then he was like, yeah, I, like, realized it wasn't loose. So, like, now it's time to push again. And I was like, knew I was, like, at a deficit. So it's just crazy, like, that they have, like, him especially, like, has such a good idea of, like, like, what is my perfect run, and like, what is, like, time, you know, like, what happens if I make a little mistake, like, where does that put me? And so, yeah, I thought it was, like, so interesting that he knew, and that's, like, where he was, I guess, down a little bit, because he was, it's like 0.3 or something, and then he went back 0.7, and he was kind of making up a little bit of time, staying even, and then ended the run at like 0.3 back. So maybe if he wouldn't have made that little mistake, then that would have put him at the win.
Yeah. And you mentioned the stairs section with the right hand corner at the bottom. I think he was saying he did kind of break too much into there and didn't carry as much speed into that section as he would have hoped to. And yeah, he seems to be kicking himself a bit for that. But yeah, it shows that it's not just a young man's game, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, I think there is something to be said about that. Like, even what Nico was saying about the bike setup, like, ridden this track so many times, like, I know where I'm going to end up at. I know, like, what it takes to get the bike set up here, or what it takes to ride this track fast. And I think that's, like, one of the reasons why you have, like, longer careers in downhill, because kind of, like, two different sides. Like, when you're younger, I think you can, like, you're willing to push maybe a little bit more or whatever, like, take some more chances. But as you get older, you get that experience. And I think in downhill, it's like so mental and kind of just knowing that type of stuff, like having the experience to know, like, where do I need to push on Leogang? Like, what is Leogang about? And I think that that's, like, where you have an advantage, like, as you get older. And like Greg's definitely old. So
I think what it shows,
Nico, what were your thoughts?
I think what it shows more than anything is, like, the age difference, the difference in body type, the different bikes out there, the different riding styles, where the most important thing is the mindset. And Greg had the mindset that he was going to go up there and win that race. And if you have that, it's much more important than any of those other things.
Yeah, for sure. It's he's an impressively strong mental game, I think, with him. Who else impressed you, Nico? There was some pretty impressive riding out there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Loic, like, just watching him ride, he didn't look like he slid around at all. Like, his tires were perfect where he wanted them, and his braking points, the way that he absorbed the impacts with his body and his bike working together. It just looked like he didn't get out of control, where a lot of other guys were kind of wild out there in certain sections, or you could tell that they were pushing. Loic looked like he was, like, calculated, like he was doing a surgery on that course, where the other guys were, like, just ripping down it more. So that was just real impressive how he was able to do that. It's like, it's always Loic's style. Like, you watch him ride compared to somebody else, and it looks like I remember a lot of runs where he and Danny would come down with close to the same time. They'd both on the same second, but Danny looks like he went 10 seconds faster because he's just out of control. Like, you can tell he's pushing. Whereas Loic is just like, his bike setup is so good from what he's able to do with his data system and his mechanic. And then the way that he rides it is just, like, very precise and smooth. So he just looks a lot more composed, I guess. But super impressive. When he came down with that time, I was like, man, no one's gonna beat that. That's gotta be the winning time. And was actually impressed at how close Greg and some of those other guys got. But yeah, Loic was, I mean, he won the race, but for other reasons, he was super impressive to me.
Yeah, yeah, and disappointing afternoon for a few people, certainly like Loris Vergier. Again, super fast qualifying run, didn't quite work out for him in the race. So yeah, he's got to be hungry and looking for a bit of redemption at the rest of the season, I suppose.
Yeah, he was. I felt so bad for him. He was really bummed. And I talked to him afterward, and they like wanted me to do an interview with him, and I was like, oh God, like, it's a rider. This is like the last thing you want to do. So I was just like, Loris, like, I need to like talk to you, but like, what do you want to say? Like, I is there a question you want me to ask you? Or like, do you want something to say? And he was just like, I think I know. And so I was like, okay, like, Loris, like, tell me, like, what's up? And he was like, I feel like I'm back in the junior days where like, I know I can win, but it's just like getting there. Like, it's one thing to be like, last year I felt like I could get a podium and I was in the mix. And like, now, like, I can win, but like, I don't want to, like, I don't want to back off because like, then maybe I won't win or whatever, but like, I'm like going for it and like things are happening, you know, I'm crashing or whatever. But he's like, I think it's just part of it. Like, everyone had to go through that. Like, Luca's gone through that. And, you know, Loic has gone through that and Amari and stuff. So he's like, I know it'll come, but it's just like, he was definitely pretty down about it, which understandable, you know, just like know you're right there. Like, all the time, you're for sure. Like, have the speed, have everything, just like putting it together. Yeah.
But a good track coming up for him next. Andorra, he goes well there, so I'm sure he'll be chomping at the bit to get there for a bit of redemption. And then Bernard Kerr, unfortunate crash higher up, but fastest rider through the kind of the new wood section that was like the key section on the Red Bull coverage. I mean, he was the only one that I saw on the live feed that took the line lower than the kind of central piece of tape, which was Ben Cathro's recommendation as well, I think. Do you think people missed something there? Do you think there was an opportunity? Did something change in that section that made that line faster, or did Bernie just ride it amazingly?
I think like, one thing about Bernard that is kind of like, I've been kind of telling him, or like we kind of been talking about it, is that he'll come out and like ride time training. Like, he always does really well in time training, like one time training at Leogang, and he'll ride the race and like, he'll always come down and be like, oh, I rode safe. Like, and he ends up in like 15th place. And I was like, dude, like, you just have to like, just go. Like, you can't, like, at this point, like, you've gotten 15th place, like, enough times and everything. And now it's like more disappointing to get a 15th place and be riding and be like, ah, like, I rode safe or whatever. And so I felt like he's been doing that. Like, Fort William, he really like pushed, and like, here, even though he crashed, like, I was like really proud of him because he was like winded or whatever, and he kind of got going, and then like, you could see he's like, okay, like, even though I crashed, whatever, I'm still gonna go and still gonna push and whatever. And he's for sure one of those riders where it's like, it doesn't really matter like what everyone else is doing, like, line wise, he'll just ride what he thinks is good. So I don't know, like, that kind of stuff for me is always personal preference. Like, I don't know if Nico, like, you look and see like if everyone's riding this line, but like, you don't feel comfortable on it, like, you still take it or whatever, you know?
I mean, I don't necessarily base what I want to do off of what everybody's doing, but if it's a section I'm struggling with, I definitely look there and see what's working for other people. And if you just stop on the side of a World Cup track for 10 minutes, you can see everything you want to see, how it works, what line's the best. And I mean, a lot of it is the way you ride it more than the line, but there's definitely some lines that are just easier to ride than other lines. So I try to find one that's like going to be the potential to be the quickest, but if there's like two that are similar, I'm going to go for the one that's going to be more consistent and easier to replicate every run, and then focus on trying to ride it well rather than ride a sketchier line that maybe doesn't have as much payoff, if even if he did.
So. Right.
Yeah, that's my approach.
Okay. And then we've got Troy and Danny, who've both been crazy consistent so far this season on all the podiums. And current standings, Troy still ahead, but only by 5 points ahead of Loic. So leaves us with an exciting rest of the season for sure. Do you think those guys are riding for the overall, or do you think they're riding for wins? Does anyone think about the overall at this point? Is everyone out to win?
Yeah, I think they're all riding for the overall. That's like Loic's kind of last box to check, I guess. He's won the Worlds and a few World Cups now, and I think that's kind of like, I feel like he really just wants to win that championship. And so I think he's thinking that way. And then Troy as well. I mean, Troy has been second or third many times this past 5 years. So he definitely wants to step it up, and he's so consistent and he's on it every time. So, yeah, wouldn't be surprised. And like the battle between those two is, it's a little bit ahead right now of the other group of riders. So it'll be interesting to see, because I feel like Troy is like a guy who will be second or third like every weekend, and Loic will get like win or be a few places back. Like Loic definitely probably, I could see him winning more races, but then also having more bad days just based on experience, based on what he's done the past few years. And he's definitely minimizing those bad days like he was able to do in Fort William, even with a tough weekend. But Troy is a guy who's like, he's going to be there every time. But the difference between getting second and first is like, it's such a fine line, but it's so crucial when you're trying to win the overall.
And what is the difference in approach between trying to ride for the win and trying to ride for the overall? Is it just a slightly lower kind of acceptance of risk during your run?
Well, I've never been in that position, but I would have to guess that, like, I mean, those guys are, when you're getting warmed up before a downhill race run, like you don't know what other people are doing. You don't know like what times are the fastest times before you race. So you just try to do your best run. But I think that those guys that are wanting to win the overall, like they can't afford a weekend with no points or few points. So they have to be able to put together a really good result every weekend. Like that's going to pay off a lot more than a big crash is, like the risk of pushing and having a big crash. So yeah, I think that to win the championship, like they just got to be there and be there in qualifying too. Like to get those, to win qualifying, get those 50 points is so big. When the gap is between first and second in the finals, 50 points. So if you can be picking up quality points every weekend, it makes a huge difference for those guys. So yeah, they got to put two fast runs together each weekend.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we've got a few weeks now of rest between this and Andorra, I think the next round. What have you guys got planned, Elliot? What are you up to for the next few weeks? You're at Crankworx, yeah?
Yeah, I'll be doing Crankworx now. And then I'm going back home. I'm going to go to Austin, Texas with my girlfriend for my birthday, chill out a bit. I don't know what's going on after that. I think I'm... I should know. I know national. When's, I don't know when national champs is. I think I'm supposed to go to that.
It's not till the next break.
Okay, next break. I got time. And then you got time, so I'll just train, chill out.
Start training.
Yeah, yeah. Theoretically.
And are you doing true. Any coverage from Crankworx, or are you just purely there racing and riding?
I'm just racing, riding.
Nice. What about you, Nico? What's on your agenda for the next few weeks?
So we got 3 weeks till Andorra. I'm going to go race the finals for our national series in Idaho this weekend. I've never been out to Idaho, so it should be a pretty fun time. I'm leading the overall, so be cool to win the national championship. And then I'm going to do some riding back here. We've got some super steep tracks at Windrock that I'm going to use to practice on a little bit and get dialed in for Andorra, because that's just super, super steep trail. And then my partner, Sean from Windrock, is building the World Cup track at Snowshoe. So I think I'm going to head up there and just check it out, see how it's looking. The weekend before we go over to Andorra, we're having one of our downhill Southeast series races to kind of like test the course out. So that'll be cool to make sure that everything you built flows right and works well, with like a lot of time to change it again before the World Cup, if anything doesn't work. Like I see you guys all the time, building stuff with an excavator, like the week of the race, like I think in Leo Gang, that like first berm and a couple other things, they were like having bigger on the track on Wednesday. And it's just like, it always ends up like breaking apart and being soft, or if it's not right, you don't have any time to change it. So it's cool that he's up there now, like 3 months in advance, working on the World Cup track and getting it all built, and then have time to make sure it all works before it's too late.
Sweet. Nice one. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be interesting to see what you guys have put together up there. So that would be cool.
Yeah.
Nice one. And thanks to the generous financial contribution of an anonymous listener and the guys at Chamonix MTB offering me a bed for a few days, I'm going to be coming to the Léger World Cup, which is awesome. So get to come and watch some more racing and record another one of these in person.
Awesome. That'll be cool. Léger is going to be sick. I feel like there's going to be so many people there because you can ride in Morzine and then watch the race. So I feel like anybody who's a fan in Europe is going to be at Léger.
Yeah, it's going to be hectic, yeah. I think. Should be good fun. Cool. Sure. Good stuff. Well, Elliot, have an awesome week at Crankworx. Nika, enjoy a little bit of rest and getting back to some US-based action. And yeah, we'll speak to you in a few weeks after Andorra.
Cool. All right. Thank you.
Cheers, man.
Yes.
Cheers. Right, that's it for our post-race show. If you've enjoyed listening, then tell your friends and share the episode on your social media. It really helps the podcast grow. Thanks to PNW Components for supporting this episode. Don't forget they've got an awesome listener discount for you, so go and check them out. Just head to pnwcomponents.com and use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout for 10% off. Please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. If you still got time after that, then leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen. It really helps. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.